This week, the Supreme Court upheld constitutional protections for abortion rights.
The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday struck down one of the nation's toughest restrictions on abortion. Women's groups said the Texas law would have forced more than three-quarters of the state's clinics to shut down.
Now, Texas passed this restrictive law back in 2013, and it would have required abortion clinics to act more like hospital surgical centers. So they would have had to spend hundreds of thousands, and in some cases millions of dollars, to upgrade their facilities.
Here's what the opinion said. It was written by Justice Breyer. Both the admitting privileges and the surgical center requirements place a substantial obstacle in the path of women seeking a pre-viability abortion, constitute an undue burden on abortion access, and thus...
To mark the occasion, we have a story about the history of abortion in the U.S. that first aired last winter, when the spread of Zika and the resulting deformities in newborns was causing panic across South and Central America. Abortion is illegal in those traditionally Catholic countries, but so many women were giving birth to babies with microcephaly and the brain damage associated with it that the U.N. High Commissioner for Human Rights urged a widespread repeal of abortion bans. You may be surprised to know this wasn't the first time an epidemic influenced the abortion debate. Leslie Regan, professor of history, medicine, gender, and women's studies, and law at the University of Illinois, says it happened in the U.S. 50 years ago. But not right away. First, we all had to learn about the real threat posed by the omnipresent, seemingly harmless illness known as rubella, or German measles.
In 1941, it was an Australian physician with mothers who figured out that it caused cataracts, and then they kept investigating and saw heart defects, deafness, and a series of other physical defects, and what they called mental retardation, intellectual impairment. And the babies could have all of these. So women who were educated, you know, and paid attention to health would try to avoid getting German measles or make sure they'd had it. Then there was an epidemic in 1958, but really no publicity about it.
The publicity happened in the 1960s when there was another epidemic. Why in the 60s and not in the 50s?
The difference is the thalidomide tragedy that many people may still remember with Sherry Finkbein and the babies who were born without arms and legs because of thalidomide in pills and cough syrups, and it was mostly in Germany and England. Pictures of those babies were in newspapers, on television, and they were really presented as freaks, basket cases. People were terrified.
You mentioned Sherry Finkbein. Who was she?
So Sherry Finkbein had taken some pills of her husband's, and then she had seen this material in the newspaper with the, quote, deformed babies, and was very concerned. She had gone to her doctor. Her doctor felt she should have a therapeutic abortion, which was legal for certain cases. The doctor was ready to perform it. She and her husband wanted an abortion. And then she went to the press to warn other women. And once she did that, the press started investigating, found out who she was, which hospital it was. And that prompted questions, controversy, religious debate, and the hospital and the doctors losing their nerve and refusing to do the abortion.
And so her right to an abortion for taking thalidomide was the opening in which the whole argument over abortion in the cases of rubella opened up.
And this is the middle of the baby boom. Every potentially pregnant woman in the country can see they could be in this situation. And in their mind, the picture they have is not a rubella baby because there are no pictures. It is those thalidomide babies. And that is what opens up the discussion and changes the representations of abortion in the media. And it was in the media quite a bit. The messages were the result of abortion is certain death. That's one. Other messages by the 50s, there's a Saturday Evening Post article on abortion that talks about the women who have abortions as sick, the kind of women who have bad relationships with their fathers, white women who choose to have relationships with, quote, colored men. They're sexually deviant.
getting back to Finkbein, who was educated and somebody that majority white America could identify with, do we know how the public felt about her?
Well, Gallup did polls on it, and over 50% of the public supported her and believed that she should have access to abortion. And then there is a big story that appears in Life magazine in 1965, and the cover has a woman getting a blood test. And that headline, "The Agony of Mothers About Their Unborn," is over a huge two-page spread of two women in a hospital in bed waiting for their abortions to be performed by, quote, conscientious doctors. This shows safe, legal abortions by doctors in hospitals. They don't use the names of the doctors. They don't say where it is. But there is one woman in this story. It's Mrs. Stonebreaker, who gives her name. They report her to be Roman Catholic. She got German measles from her son. They warn women to stay away from children.
That was the public health message around rubella, stay away from children?
Yeah, avoid children. Just as insulting as the current advice that's being given to women today.
The advice given to women in the Zika-affected areas.
Yes. It's just that the federal government then could not possibly have given advice like use birth control and don't get pregnant.
It's interesting. In your book, you discuss an installment of the Ladies' Home Journal, Tell Me Doctor column, which suggests that an abortion is a decision that belongs to the pregnant woman.
It's a very interesting article. In that story, she is both given information that it's up to her to make the decision, and she is in consultation with her husband and her doctor. Her doctor gives her information that says it's only a 10% chance. And the doctor says it's 90% likelihood the baby will be fine. And with those odds, I'm not willing to do an abortion. But someone else might. So this is not really her choice. Mm-hmm. This is a very mixed message, mm-hmm. right? But it is at the same time educating everybody as to what German measles is and that they, in fact, might pressure doctors around this issue. People were able to start talking about it publicly where they had been unable to do so for the last 70 years while it was illegal. And there are physicians who organized the leadership of the obstetrics and gynecology to sign on that they believe that the laws should change. This is only 65, and by 67, 68, you have the medical profession agreeing that there should be a repeal of the laws. It's pretty amazing.
Which brings us back to Zika, because you have the UN High Commissioner, and I'm going to quote him. He says, "The advice of some governments to women to delay getting pregnant ignores the reality that many women and girls simply cannot exercise control over whether or when or under what circumstances they become pregnant, especially in an environment where sexual violence is so common." He says that they need to start lifting bans on abortion, that they breach human rights treaties. And of course, in most of the Zika-affected countries, abortion is either illegal or mostly illegal. In describing the history of the discussion here, you pointed to the big change that occurred when the emphasis moved from poor people and people of color to, you know, middle-class white women, model moms. The people who are currently susceptible to the Zika virus are south of the border. And I just wonder whether that's going to suppress the discussion in this country.
Well, I think so far, it's sort of seen as they have no reproductive rights in those Catholic countries, but we do here in the U.S. And it's not being said, but I think you can read it that way. Well, we don't really have reproductive rights for everybody in this country. This was part of what led to Roe versus Wade, is it varied depending on where you lived, what state, what county, which hospital you went to, and by your income and by your race. And that's why Roe versus Wade was decided in the way that it was because of the inequality. In some places, it it is the same as it was. We now have people doing their own. We have some people in hospitals, and people can spend a lot of money to go to another state to get a safe abortion.
I have to say that the impact of a rubella outbreak in the early 1960s came as a complete shock to me.
And you would not have imagined, in a time when nobody was talking about abortion, when it was extremely stigmatized, and women are in pearls and little tiny hats, they're the ones who begin to talk about the need for abortion, and it leads to Roe versus Wade. Similarly, in Central America, South America, there's over 1 million abortions every year, just as there were in the U.S., and they're illegal, and it's stigmatized. We don't know what'll happen, and I'm very, very curious to see.
Leslie, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Leslie Regan is professor at the University of Illinois and author of Dangerous Pregnancies, Mothers, Disabilities, and Abortion in Modern America. This was an On the Media Podcast Extra. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.